it's a real challenge, especially today, to be successful musician, because A, there are so many different ways of doing it. It's hard to cut through. You know, I'm not going to try and dress it up in anything. I'm going to be honest and say that it is really difficult.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen bei Back and Stage, der Podcast von und mit uns, Miriam Weichselbraun und Tommy Schmiedle. Back, weil Tommy als Autor und Regisseur lieber aus dem Hintergrund agiert und Sendungen kreiert.
Während Miriam als Moderatorin auf der Bühne und vor der Kamera steht, also sie ist voll Stage.
Back and Stage eben.
Und weil wir uns gut kennen und uns trotzdem auch mögen, laden wir uns gegenseitig tolle Gäste aus unserem beruflichen Umfeld ein.
Einmal er für mich.
Und dann wieder sie für mich.
Und dann besprechen wir aus ganz verschiedenen Blickwinkeln ein ganz spezielles Thema,
das irgendwie zu unserem Gast passt.
Was ist mit dir los, Tommy, heute? Bist du so gut gelaunt?
Ja, ich kann eigentlich leider nicht mal geradeaus pfeifen. Aber
nee, es war jetzt nicht so schlecht. Ich habe erkannt, dass du wahrscheinlich sehr glücklich bist.
Don't worry, be happy. Ja? Ja. Ja, und es fasziniert mich immer noch, und ich glaube, die Nummer ist 1989 entstanden, von Bobby McFerrin. Sagt dir das noch was?
Ja, das sagt mir noch was.
So, und es war ein sogenanntes One-Hit-Wonder. Und dieser Mann hat ja nicht nur die Nummer selbst geschrieben, sondern auch selbst jede Spur gesungen.
Ja, das ist natürlich dann auch finanziell ein Volltreffer, wenn man sowas kann, sage ich mal.
Hast du dir nie überlegt, ob du vielleicht auch mal einen Song schreiben möchtest?
Nein, ich habe es immer, wenn ich mal probiert hätte, was sehr selten war, aber dann bin ich immer mit einem Song zum Schluss dagestanden, den es schon gibt. Also ich hätte Plagiatsvorwürfe en masse.
Verstehe, aber ich meine, du könntest ja auch nur einen Text schreiben und jemanden anderen bitten, die Musik zu machen.
Es gibt so viele talentierte Menschen da draußen, die könnten das dann machen. Ich halte mich da zurück. Ich habe einmal bei einem Musical mitgesungen und habe auch gemerkt, dass ich zwar sehr musikalisch bin, glaube ich, aber eben gerade deshalb mich nicht singen hören mag, weil ich sofort höre, wenn ich falsch singe. Und das macht dann gar keinen Spaß. Dann verlässt mich ad hoc die Freude an allem.
Aber du bist ja auch sehr viel ausgebildet. Du hast ja wirklich viel gemacht. War da nie Gesangstraining dabei oder so?
Ich bin nicht ausgebildet. Ich bilde mich jeden Tag noch selber aus. Es war nie Gesangs. Doch, es war mal ganz kurz eben für dieses eine Musical habe ich Gesangstraining gemacht. Aber das hat nicht viel gebracht. Was für Musik hörst du eigentlich gern?
Ich bin sehr weit. Es gibt, glaube ich, keine Art von Musik, die ich nicht leiden kann, außer wenn es überhaupt keine Melodie gibt. Aber das passiert
also
eigentlich fast
nie. Also du magst es melodisch?
Ich mag es eher melodisch, aber ich kann zu allem tanzen.
Und du bist ja auch Schlagerfan, gell?
Das ist wirklich nicht sehr fair, was du jetzt machst, weil dieser Begriff des Schlagers so weit ist, dass man darüber eine eigene Sendung machen muss. Ich bin kein Fan des Schlagers, wie er heute fabriziert wird.
Ich habe dir auf jeden Fall jemanden eingeladen heute und unseren Hörerinnen und Hörern, der dir wahrscheinlich ein Begriff ist. Sie ist ein... ja, kann man sagen, Superstar. Ihre Songs wurden über 23 Milliardenfach gestreamt. Sie hat 18 Millionen Alben verkauft, 14 Millionen Singles. Sie ist eine starke Frau, sie ist intelligent, sie ist ein sehr netter Mensch und ihr Name ist Ellie Goulding.
Hi, I'm Ellie Goulding and I am speaking to you guys from the countryside in Gloucestershire, which is about a few hours out of London. Very, very happy to speak to you.
Thank you very
today.
Much.
So good to have you on the show.
Thank you so, so much for having me.
Thanks a lot for joining us at Back and Stage, our new podcast. You are such an international star, and so I'm a little bit nervous about my English, but I'll do my very best. Welcome. Thank you.
Well, he's generally nervous, you know, around women, so it's all right.
That's not right. But,
yeah. Thank you. Listen, English people never know another language, so it's impressive all the same, so don't worry about that.
Thank you.
Let me just throw some numbers in here. Over 23 billion streams, 18 million albums, 14 million singles. I mean, I could go on and on with achievements. It's such a big deal to have such a long and successful career. What do you put it down to? I mean, other than your talent, of course, but joking aside, artists sometimes come and go quite quickly, but you don't.
I think I stay very open-minded in music. I'm not afraid to explore different routes in pop music. I'm continually fascinated and in awe of what you can do, or what producers can do, and you know, what writers can come up with. I've always found, since I was very young, pop music so fascinating, and how it captures people and how it becomes you know, the soundtrack of people's lives and moments. And I think that kind of curiosity and interest in new music, so always paying attention to what's coming out, whether new classical music or new electronic music, I've always been really conscious of that, and conscious of everything that's being made. And so I think that really helps in creating music that is not, you know, you're not stuck in the past. I mean, occasionally I make music that does so much better in the future than it does in the moment I make it. So I try and figure that one out. But yeah, I think you've got to keep that curiosity, and you've got to keep that passion for new music. But also, you know, I try and work with people that I feel like are before their time. I try to work with new producers who perhaps haven't quite hit the big time yet, but they're just on the cusp of it. I think that's the most exciting time to work with someone. I've worked with so many producers that before they're famous, basically, or before they're well known. And I love that. And I've often discovered singers before they release a big song. And I just think that's just such an exciting thing. I remember when I was talking to my first producer, Starsmith, about it actually this morning, about the fact that we just made our first album, Lights, with no pressure, no one else involved, just in a bedroom in London. And we were just making these tunes, and there was no expectation. There was no kind of direction. It was just like, we just did what we wanted to do. And it's so great when you find that connection with someone. It's so great when you find that connection with other musicians and other producers and writers. It's something that shouldn't be taken for granted, because, you know, it's so difficult going in the studio with a new person. It's like a first date. You don't know how it's going to go, and you don't know, you know, if you've got anything in common. You don't know if you've got the same, if you're on the same wavelength. So that's why studio sessions are always, it's interesting working with brand new people. But when you find those people that you really connect with on a creative level, it's pretty priceless, that.
But Tommy is actually a big fan of your latest, the fourth album, Brightest Blue, aren't you, Tommy?
Yes, of course. And my favorite song is Power.
Oh, thank you.
There you sing, "I'm not a material girl. Everything in your world just feels like plastic." I think you sing about a relationship, but is there a second message for the young people?
I think I was kind of tongue-in-cheek touching on the material side of social media, which I think is ever increasing. I feel like the more time we spend on social media, the more we feel like we have to project a life that might not be entirely real. And I understand it, because it's almost like it's a competitive thing that we've all kind of found ourselves in, where we have to, you know, compete with who's doing the most fun things, or who's got the best, I don't know, like who's having the best time, basically. And it's such a bizarre thing. And I mean, I'm married and I'm perfectly happy. And then I think about, you know, the superficiality of some of my past situations, and just because of the nature of my job and the people I ended up kind of surrounding myself with, it just makes me appreciate like the realness of what I have now. I know that there are people who feel like they have to have this kind of material appeal. And so I think that's what I was thinking about when I wrote that. And also, you know, talking about just somebody just wanting this kind of power over someone rather than actual, real, authentic love and connection. And I think it happens more than we realize. And then, you know, some people just break up, and then some people still end up getting married. And, you know, it's just, humans are so complex. And, you know, the Bjork song, Human Behavior, like sums it up pretty well. I just think it's, we are totally bizarre as humans. And I think that's what keeps my songwriting pretty active, you know.
But it's so interesting. I sometimes think back, for example, for, you know, to the very first moment I met my now husband, Ben. And if someone would have told me then that that's my future husband and father of my kids, I would have said, no way. Sorry, but that can't be true.
Do you remember? I can laugh 'cause I know him.
Yeah. Do you remember the first moment you met Casper? And if someone would have told you that.
So wild how life goes. And I also did not expect to marry the person that I am married to. But I really believe that the reason I've kept it so, I haven't really been that sort of open about my relationship with Casper, because I feel it to be like slightly more sacred than anything else. But also that I don't feel like I need to make it into a song. I don't need to make it into a story. I don't need to embellish it. And I don't need to, you know, use kind of that excuse of being a songwriter to make it into something that it isn't. You know, it's just, I knew probably a few months in that I was going to marry him somehow, but not when I first met him, for sure. It just, yeah, it's very strange, because it often, the long-term relationships and the marriages are with the person that you expect it with the least. I've definitely been in romantic, inverted commas, situations in the past where I feel like I'm head over heels in love with someone. And actually it turned out to be complete opposite. So it's funny how life goes.
But you know, it reminds me a bit of, for example, your second album. It took 60 weeks to get to number one. So it took some time, but once it was there, you know, you kind of fell truly in love with it. So some good things need time.
Totally. And I feel like my career and my life has been full of those strange little kind of romantic things. I saw that as being a really beautiful moment when the album just seemed to connect. And yeah, it took a while for me and my husband to have that, you know, connection. But once it was there, it was locked and it was forever, you know. And it seems like sometimes I release music that's not quite ready and then people connect with it a lot later. In fact, it's happened with a few songs. I mean, Lights took a long, long time to get to I think it was number one or number two on Billboard like 10 years ago or maybe 9 years ago, but it took a long, long time. So I quite like those little stories. I think it makes it more interesting, and it just means I never know what's going to happen. I never know what's around the corner, and I can
keep
having that kind of unpredictability that I thrive off in music.
I read the first instrument you learned was the clarinet.
It's funny you should mention the clarinet, because my mum brought over my first clarinet the other day.
I saw you playing.
It was my very first clarinet, and it still has all the old reeds in it that are all broken and gross from all the times that I've played it. But I love thinking back to when I played in an orchestra and played this beautiful instrument, but sadly not that useful for songwriting, clarinet.
And how many instruments do you play?
I really just play guitar and a bit of piano at the moment, but I've dabbled in things, you know. I used to be, I suppose I could call myself quite a musical person in that I can pick up instruments pretty quick, but I tried to stick to guitar and piano so I can write more songs.
But your voice is an instrument too, I think.
I like to think so. I learn new things from it every day. Every time I have a vocal coach session, or I sing a different song, or I sing a different lyric, my voice does different things. It presents itself in different ways on different days. And that's why I feel like it is kind of an instrument. I never know how it's going to sound. I think every performance is different. And maybe that's one of the reasons why people have I've stuck around, because I think people are always waiting to see what I'm going to sing next.
But how much do you think writing songs is a learned craft or something you were born with?
It's definitely not something you're born with. I mean, maybe, you know, Bob Dylan or Paul McCartney, it's not something I was born with. It's something that I definitely had a passion for. I think I've spent years trying to get better at it. It's different with writing completely from the heart and writing things that just come into your head and getting things out on paper. And then there's the craft of writing pop songs, which requires a bit more thought. You have to really imagine how the song is going to sound, perhaps on the radio or through someone's speakers. And you have to imagine other people singing along, because to me, that's what a pop song is. It's something that is something that accompanies you, like is your friend, something that you can move to, something that you can sing along to, relate to, or just you know, sympathize with the singer in such a way that you just you fall in love with the song. So it's a really a whole pop writing pop music is a whole other craft that I am always trying to get better at, and something I'll always be in awe of.
But I can imagine it's not easy being creative in so many ways. You write the music, you write the lyrics. Can you explain to us how does it work?
It can vary, I suppose. It depends who you're writing with and what their process is. I like to write with other people. I find it much more stimulating to be with other people in a room, and just more fun, you know, when you find a few people that you can have a drink with and open up and express yourself and not feel afraid to be honest and open about things. It's fun. And that, you know, I love the process just being silly and fun. And I think that's where the spontaneity comes from. And that's where the best songs come from. Complete, just, you know, everybody feeling like they can lose their inhibitions. So it can really vary. You know, sometimes you can go in the studio with somebody and feel like nothing is really happening. Nothing is really, there's no spark, there's no magic. Like I said, going back to like the first date analogy, sometimes you're just like, okay, this isn't happening today. But then a song is born out of that frustration. So you may find yourself just, you hit a wall where you just have, you don't have anything to say or anything to write. But then somehow a song will come out of that frustration. So, or somebody has a particular lyric they really want to use, or there's a, you know, or everybody, I remember around the time that Donald Trump was just annoying the hell out of everyone and just making everyone feel like it was the end of the world. And there were so many lyrics coming out of that. Or when somebody has just, you know, sadly just broken up with someone, or what, you know, not somebody not who hasn't seen their family for a while. There's always something. There's always an emotion or a sort of sentiment that people want to put into a song that day. So there'll always be something. But otherwise, you might just hear an incredible bass line or a synth or a certain sound or a sample that you're like, we've got to make something with that. So it can really vary, and that's why I love songwriting, because it's different every time.
Elliot, just recently saw your photos on Vogue, and I saw a couple of clips of you online. Obviously, I mean, you look fantastic. You've been always very sporty, very fit. How did you feel seeing your body changing during pregnancy over the last months?
Oh, wow. Well, it's been a very wild journey for me. It's, you know, for somebody who is usually so in control of my body, in the sense that I know what I have to do to get to a certain place. I know what I have to do to be a certain level of fitness. And so I've always been very used to understanding my body and how I can change it and how I can keep it in a place of calmness and strength. And then suddenly, you know, pregnancy just completely makes all that stuff go out the window. You almost have to kind of surrender to what your body is doing, which is becoming a carrier for another human being. So it's a very strange thing to initially get used to, but I think it's as I'm sure you know, it's one of those things where you just have to accept the changes that are happening. And, you know, it's nature, it's your body will do what it needs to do. And you just have to relax into it and try to just, you know, go with what's happening, because you can't change it. And it's nothing about, you know, it's not just about your eating habits or your fitness levels. It's more just like hormonal and emotional changes. And there are so many factors to pregnancy that I didn't know about, actually. But I've tried to be very intuitive and just listen to my body. And that's kind of how I've navigated through it.
Ellie, I saw a video of you working out when you were 8 months pregnant, I think. Honestly, I couldn't do that. I'm obviously not pregnant, but I couldn't do that. You're really ambitious.
I've tried to just, like I said, totally tune in with my body. And to be honest, I haven't had any signs that I should not be doing certain things. I've stopped running because running feels not natural at the moment. So I've just been doing exactly what I feel like and not doing what I don't feel like. And I think that's kind of really how I live my life anyway. If I wake up and feel like going for a very long run, I will, and I'll commit to it. If I don't, I won't. And that's the flexibility that I sort of, that I've really enjoyed bringing into my life.
I mean, I think that's the approach you take in your fitness book as well, isn't it? Like, that the book is called Fitter, Calmer, Stronger. It comes up in September. And it, just because you're talking about it now, I think the approach you take there is very much like listening to your body, isn't it, as well? It's not just a strict regime you can't stick to, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. And pregnancy has really been, you know, kind of a slightly more intense version of that, because you really do have to listen to your body. There's so much more happening with your body than usual, so you have to sort of almost tune in that little bit more. But yeah, in general in life, you know, I'm a creative person, and I see that as mostly having unpredictability and chaos and kind of out of controlness in my life, where I have to usually be in, you know, a fairly bad place to write my best songs, which is kind of the predicament that every artist and every creative person is confronted with, in that you're not always going to be in a necessarily a sane place to create your art. So for me, it's, you know, the art of pop music. That is what I do. I love the art of making pop songs, but it doesn't mean that there's a clean way of doing it. You know, for example, I would, you know, drink in the studio, and I would have to, you know, just be slightly kind of all over the place and out of control. But with this side of my life, I feel like it's been a lot of trial and error of finding a balance between how I can continue to be creative and as creative as possible, but also keep myself in a healthy, calm place. Because, you know, I've had years of, like I said, of drama in my life. And I've got to a point now, I've realized that I just am so much better off when I'm in the calmest possible place in my head. And then also for you know, keeping myself strong, my default is being as physically and mentally strong. That's how I want to be. And I feel the best when I feel the strongest physically. Mm. So, and that also in turn helps my mental health. So it's really, the book is about how I've balanced those two things, which are seemingly opposite things. But, you know, it's just getting that resilience that you can keep for life. And it's great when you can figure that out, even in life's, you know, crazy challenges and twists and turns, as we've all seen with the pandemic. You know, who knows where life is going to take us all. And we found ourselves in this crazy situation last year with a global pandemic. And so it's always being prepared for life taking you in strange places, basically.
Yeah.
Fit and Calmer, it's certainly a healthy combination, but I guess a lot of people forget to live due to their fitness program. What do you think? They are too strict. They coming up with diets, fitness plans, simply, but they can't stick to.
That's the thing. I think it can be so difficult to stick to a plan. I think we're kind of wired, I think, very short term, in a very short term way. So we can very easily build up fitness levels for a goal. Say we want to get super fit for a marathon, or we want to fit into our favorite dress for a wedding, or, you know, we do like a 28-day plan. And they do work for a while. I think what I'm trying to do in this book is show that you really can have this flexibility in your life that enables you to adapt to every day. You know, every day is different. Every day comes with a different kind of challenge. It's really being kind to yourself, and it's not about doing, you know, a HIIT session every morning. It's not about jumping on the Peloton every single day or going out for like a, you know, 10K run. It's like, it's really just kind of adapting your life to the madness of life, if you know what I mean, of all the different things that are gonna. I think it's more about confronting the challenges rather than thinking that you can avoid them and you can ignore them with other things. And so I think that's what I try and sort of explore in the book, and just really talk about my mentality and how I've survived through my career, and basically how I've stayed relatively sane in everything.
I think Tommy just pictures himself in a 10K run, and it's, you know, we lost him then. He's just, you know, this guy is literally just sitting around all day. He just didn't move.
Thank you very much, Miriam. Yeah. But you're right. I don't like running, doing any kind of sports. Honestly.
Well, you will one day, my friend, because it's healthy for you. Ellie, you've been just talking about your creativity. I know you are constantly working on new music. I had the chance to listen to a few bits, and it's just amazing what you continuously create. Do you feel pressure being back at work quite soon? Not necessarily from others, but maybe just, you know, from yourself as well, because we as women and mothers as well, we put pressure on ourselves because we love our jobs and we are not just moms. We want to get back to work soon. How do you feel about going back to work?
I think I have no idea how I'm going to feel until this baby is here, and this baby will be here soon. I think I really can't kind of assess the situation until then, but something tells me that I will want to go back to work pretty soon, because that's just who I am. I have, by the way, a really newfound respect for women that have children and become mothers and become full-time mums, because I can already tell from pregnancy that this is a huge undertaking and a huge life-changing thing. But for me, you know, I've always been wired to work. I love to work. I love to be productive. I love to spend my days doing as much as possible. And that includes, you know, taking quiet time and meditative time. And it doesn't mean I'm doing stuff all the time. It just means I'm always conscious of how I'm spending my days. So I think that I will just again be very intuitive. And if I feel as though I'm ready to go back in the studio, then I will. And if I, at the same time, if I feel like I need to instinctively, like I need to be putting time into, you know, being a mother, then that's also what I'll do.
I feel like in many jobs, it can be especially hard for women in the industry. So people like to see you in a certain light. They want you to sound a certain way.
No, I think initially it's very hard for you to stay true to yourself, because you get pulled in so many different directions and you get given so many different opinions on what you should be. And it was definitely a learning curve. I had to spend a lot of time figuring out, really who I was. And that takes time, and it takes songs, and it takes tours, and it takes, you know, growing and evolving as a singer and as a performer. So it's very easy to get lost. So you just have to have the right people around you. You have to have good management and good support. You know, you want people to encourage you to be exactly who you are in that moment. And if you don't have those people around you, then you really do have to consider, you know, that sort of external factors, because it's very hard to do it all by yourself.
And some artists are just lacking the right support system. I saw you speaking out for Britney after you watched the documentary, and we all, I think, felt so much for her. Talking about women in the music industry, the Annenberg study said out of 900 songs in 2020, 20.2% of all artists were women, 12.9% songwriters were women, and then only 2% of producers were women. So the ratio of men to women producers was 38-1. I mean, that's crazy. Why is it still so difficult for women to break into the industry?
I think women are still not, even though we've been working really hard to change it, I still don't think women are in a position of being taken seriously in the music industry. And there are fantastic female producers out there. I think there definitely still is a sense that, you know, that the music industry is very much like a man's territory when it comes to producers and guitarists and songwriters. I love having females on my team. If anything, I prefer it. It feels so much more natural to me to have women around me. So I try and work with female songwriters and producers as much as I can. There's definitely still so much to be done and so much to be tackled with equality. I've heard so many horror stories. That's why I spoke out after the Britney documentary, because it definitely is an industry dictated, that was dictated by men, and we're still kind of living in that world or still working in those realms of what men have dictated rather than women. So it's like we're speaking a language that we didn't write. So we're still navigating that. I do feel as though things are getting better, and there, you know, for example, festival lineups are becoming more equal, female and male fronted bands and acts, but it's definitely gone through big changes in the past few years. But there's still a lot needs to change. It still feels like a very male-dominated industry.
And I think you are an idol for all the female and male singer-songwriters who love playing the guitar, writing their own music, telling their stories, but they don't have the success you have. They can't make a living from what they do. What's your advice?
It's a real challenge, especially today, to be successful musician, because there are so many different ways of doing it. There are, you know, there's a huge saturation of TikTok stars and Instagram stars and YouTube stars, and it's hard to cut through. You know, I'm not going to try and dress it up in anything. I'm going to be honest and say that it is really difficult. If you're writing your own songs and you are playing your own instruments and you are working with people you love, then you really can't do much more than that other than just be really open-minded. You know, if it's really, really what you want, then of course you've got to have a certain amount of hustle. You definitely can't expect things to just come to you. You've got to put the work in. But it's easy for me to say that because, you know, I was lucky enough to end up doing the job that I wanted to do and being successful. But I really do wish, I wish so much success on young singer-songwriters, because it's just getting harder and harder for people to break through all the noise and all the mess, and there is so much out there, and it's not easy, but you know, it's a very humble situation to be, you know, writing songs that you're so passionate about, writing about your own personal situations, really opening yourself up and putting your heart on the line and putting yourself out there, and then for that to not get any recognition or to not sort of cut through is really difficult. So I just have so much respect for creative people and artists that are out there, you know, working so hard and doing what they love, making what they love, regardless of how it's going to be perceived or how successful it's going to be. So it's just tough, you know, it's tough out there for artists, but I'm hoping that, you know, we can come through the pandemic better on the other side somehow.
Ellie, thank you so much for your time. It was so lovely to speak to you, and it's such an honor to have you on Back in Stage. So thank you so much. Please say hi to Casper, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you guys so much. It was really lovely to speak to you.
Speak to you soon.
And all the best.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Bye.
Ellie Goulding bei Back and Stage. Tommy, was schön für dich?
Das war richtig erquickend, möchte ich sagen, weil sie so sympathisch ist.
Erquickend.
Ja, weil sie so sympathisch ist, obwohl sie wirklich ein riesiger Weltstar ist. Unfassbar. Können wir uns eine Scheibe davon abschneiden? Ich freue mich auf dich. Du bist ja auch ein Star, meistens auch sympathisch. Und ich hoffe, wir hören uns in 2 Wochen wieder. Da habe ich dir jemanden mitgebracht. Mit dem oder mit der hättest du wohl nie gerechnet.
Lass dich überraschen.
Oh nein, es ist nicht Rudi Carrell.
Schon kann es geschehen.
Der kommt leider nicht mehr.
Dass auch deine Wünsche in Erfüllung gehen.
Ich bin mir sehr sicher.
Ich bin gespannt.
Wir müssen noch einen Song mit dir aufnehmen irgendwann. Ellie hat sicher schon einen in der Schublade.
Okay, alles klar. Wir hören uns in 2 Wochen, alte Hackfresse.
Gut, ich freue mich auf dich.
Ciao. Und vielen Dank euch da draußen fürs Zuhören und dabei sein. Folgt uns, abonniert uns, kommentiert und bewertet, was das Zeug hält. Ich freue mich drauf. Bis dann.
Dankeschön. Bis. Ihr wart bezaubernd.
Das war Back End Stage von Miriam Weichselbraun und Tommy Schmiedle.
Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr unseren Podcast abonniert und uns vielleicht sogar eine nette Bewertung hinterlasst. Und falls ihr Lust habt, verratet uns doch in den Apple-Kommentaren, welchen Gast wir uns für euch einmal einladen sollten.
Wir freuen uns auf die Vorschläge und wenn ihr beim nächsten Mal wieder mit dabei seid. Bye-bye und Baba von Miriam aus London und
Tommy from Austria.